to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning to you, Rod, and Happy New Year. Welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year to you, Mikey.
I believe you've been traipsing around one of the greatest countries on earth.
Indeed, I was up in the States for a month, friends, family, and also some great interviews for work. So it was a good chance to try and get my head around what on earth's going on in that country.
You wrote a scathing report about Trump's influence on the country on your return. Tell us a wee bit about that.
Yes. I think an important point about Trump is that it's not just about him. He is being truly extraordinarily magnificent. I obviously say that not in a supportive way, at exploiting huge generation-long conflicts and splits in the country that have been papered over. But he's been he is incredibly good at exploiting those. And in a sense, there's a great bit of truth-telling going on in the States about how racist the country is, how broken down the health system is in terms of its inequality, and all sorts of other problems like that. So there is great sort of truth-telling going on, not by Trump himself, who is famously untruthful. There's the great data that the Washington Post collects, and that he hit the 2,000 mark of false and misleading statements on day 355 of his presidency, which was a rate of 5.6 a day, but the rate's increasing. So that was the average over almost the year. In the last couple of months, he's kind of up to about 7 a day.
It's people almost hit like a saturation point with talking about Trump, but it's important that we do, isn't it? Because is he sinister, or is he just a complete dunderhead?
I personally can't work that out. I mean, obviously, incredibly smart in some ways. I was about to use some deeply unflattering words there. There's a cunning to him, and he, on one hand, is extraordinarily narcissistic, but on the other hand, doesn't seem to care what people think about him, which is a very weird combination.
Yeah.
He's literally shameless, therefore he says and does the things that he does. And amazingly, people are getting quite inured to it, not sort of accepting it, but it's incredibly hard for Trump to shock people anymore, which I think is actually very dangerous. But I think a really important message is that it's not just all about him, because behind the chaos of the Trump White House, there is a conservative agenda being worked through by others.
Do you suggest it's the people behind the reason? Because what blows my mind is that he'll come out and just exploit something which is completely irrelevant to anything that's going on or has been for months or years, and suddenly just. But is also at the same time incredibly explosive and divisive once he does bring it up, you know, and he seems to be ignoring all the important day-to-day stuff of running the country and just finding just these vulnerable little points. And that's why I wonder whether it's cunning or just stupidity, or
I think it's certainly cunning, because he knows how to constantly grab the limelight, seize the agenda.
He's the president of the United States. You get the limelight. You get it every day, you know?
But it's obviously never quite enough for him. and of course, it is very much about... It's entirely about him rather than sort of any concept of that. I think
Republicans or Democrats or something.
Well, a sense of the office. I think, George W. Bush and other, any other president you can think of to varying degrees has or develops a sense of the office or the responsibility of the office, and there is them as a person, and I am the president, but then there is the presidency.
Sure.
But I think Trump has no concept of that at all. It is absolutely all about him.
It's astounding, isn't it? And like you say, everyone gets a little bit over it. Everyone just gets, well, I've heard about that. Oh, what, I don't want to hear about it. I'm sick of him just giving him oxygen every day, you know? But yeah, you sort of have to.
But you do, and it's important to keep, you know, for people to keep trying to fight for what's sort of right and sensible. But the fact of the matter is the U.S. Has grievous problems in terms of the breakdown of the political system, i.e. the domination of money and the gerrymandering of congressional districts, and the breakdown of any trust and bipartisanship in Congress. All of those things are very major. And then on the economic front, there are this is a system that has never worked for a chunk of society, but that's getting worse in a very big way. And the post-truth, post-science thing that Trump and others push, that's at some point going to have, if it continues, is going to have some impact on the US's ability to take genuine stock of what its issues are and work out some good responses to them. There's some extraordinarily crazy, completely ineffectual, well, damaging things being done that would just make no sense in a country that was behaving more rationally.
But did you have a good time?
Well, yes, absolutely. I first went to the States as an exchange student, hang on for an old year here, 1969, when I finished school, high school.
Yeah.
And I ended up staying for university and meeting my wife at university. So I've had American family now since the mid-1970s. I've lived in the States and Canada for 10 years at crucial times. And so it's been very much part of my life. I'd have to say, though, that setting off on this trip, I went with a heavier heart than I ever had before. And I obviously wanted to see friends and family, but I was thinking of all those other things. But in a funny way, I think I came back a little more optimistic than I left.
I was going to ask you, was there any optimism in there?
Yeah, I mean, a book that came out, oh gosh, about 4 years ago, Doris Kearns Goodwin, wonderful American historian, called The Bully Pulpit. And it was about the period of American politics from the early 1890s to the First World War, which has extraordinary parallels with today, because that was a time when...
That doesn't sound very exciting.
No. But it was because it was a time that economics and technology and business had progressed so far, it's completely raced ahead of society and politics, and so all sorts of crazy stuff was going on. It was, and it was very, very corrupt politics at that time. But what came out of that was the progressive movement and progressive politics that laid down some really big changes that are still part of U.S. society and government today. It was a very important turning point. Look, I also have to say that journalists were important to that. That was the time of the Muckrakers, which was at the time was an honourable calling for sort of investigative journalists, who played a great role breaking up. Amazing woman called Ida Tarbell, who was one of those people who led to the breakup of Rockefeller's Standard Oil monopoly of the oil industry. So I was reflecting on that book, which I think's a great book, and certainly some of the conversations I was having with people, there are some fiercely determined people there, of which our own daughter's one, who, because she's a graduate student in the States, Kearns' lovely, lovely expression is that the U.S. has a talent for reinventing itself, and that can be really painful, incredibly messy, as it kind of molts one skin and grows another. And I think that's the period that we're in now, which is good, because an awful lot of stuff was not making sense in the States before Trump came along. He's exploiting that. He's making it worse, but maybe he's accelerating that change.
Tell us what's going on in Davos. It's all about grown up to me.
No, it is. Davos is such an odd gathering of very senior business people and politicians, usually very self-congratulatory about how magnificently they're running the world. And when they do lock onto issues, as they do, I mean, they do some good analysis. It tends to be a bit self-congratulatory and a bit too focused on the power of business to change things. Now, business is really important. That's why I'm a business journalist.
And that's why I asked you, Rob.
I'm sorry, I haven't been looking at the news overnight as to whether Trump is definitely going to go.
We'll leave Trump right out of it. I'm just looking at the story where William R. White, who's an OECD economist, said that the global economy is as precarious now as it was in 2008.
Yeah, I'm
with him. Do you agree?
I'm with him all the way on that. I took a fierce interest in all that at the time and post, and still keep up with the debates about the extent to which the global system has been improved or not. He is dead right. I think that's very sound analysis, and he used to be the chief economist of the Bank of International Settlements, which is the central bank's central bank, if you like, so very highly respected person. And he's not alone, far from it. There are other people who are equally clear on their views. Quite how that works out, though, as always, is a little, very unclear. Crises can kind of have parallels, but they don't exactly duplicate each other. In some ways, the global economy is a bit stronger now than it was in 2008. But in other ways, there are greater difficulties. The central banks don't have the same suite of tools that they use then to try and stabilize things. They can't lower interest rates now, for example, because they're already on the floor. I'm sorry to sound like a breathless spectator, but you know, this is going to be an extraordinarily interesting year or two we try to navigate through all of this.
To the average BFM listener down here on the street at the Coalface, just, you know, keep your battler up from Struggle Street, just trying to make ends meet, Rod, is that something we're going to notice, or is it something for the big boys to look after? Does that mean the big boys just get more money?
I sincerely hope not the latter. But it is something for us all to bear in mind. Obviously, as we I say this even for myself, as we go about our daily, weekly lives, not to be, totally depressed or ground down by all this, but just be a bit cautious about not going too crazy on your finances, if you could manage not to do that, because it's good to give yourself a little bit of room for manoeuvre when it gets tougher. So if there is a big problem with the global economy, that will happen here. We came through the global financial crisis better than many countries, because of demand from China for our resources. But of course, that was a big growth in those resources in those demand. Yeah. We can't replicate that same growth again because we can't kind of double up on what we did last time, if you see what I mean.
I definitely do. All right, and you come back to a country where the Prime Minister's pregnant, and they began work up in at Ratana and soon up in Waitangi, and then into the big house for a big year of proper grown-up politics.
Yeah, and they've pretty much completed, or I think will complete by the end of the 100 days, their 100-day list, and there's been a few changes for good practical reasons on the list on the way through. For a party that wasn't expecting to be in office, they have got themselves sorted out reasonably well, I think. It's very hard to tell. It's a good thing that the Christmas and New Year's intervened to give them a bit of a breathing space. It's going to be a real test for them over this next year to show how clear and decisive and useful various policy changes are, various law changes, to just to bed down the confidence of business a bit, that this is a government that can run the show.
Handle the jandle. Handle the jandle, as it were.
Handle the jandle, indeed.
Hey, Rod, lovely to have you back on the show, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.